Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. I'm the second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today, I'm joined by Scott Rutke, president of Concourse Land Transfer. With more than 18 years of experience in title insurance, Scott runs the day-to-day operations of Concourse and is a recognized voice in the industry. He's a longtime contributor to New Jersey's The Advocate magazine, serves on the NJLTA Convention Committee, and is a trustee of the New Jersey Title Insurance Political Action Committee. Scott's story combines family business roots, professional reinvention, and entrepreneurial ventures, from building Concourse's presence in title insurance to supporting his wife's interior design and home fragrance brand, and even investing in businesses with close partners in wine and cigars. Scott, welcome to Growing Up B2B. Great to have you on today.
Thanks, Ed. I appreciate it.
Awesome. Hey, let's start with your roots. You grew up, as I understand it, working in your father's garment business. Talk about that for me. What did you learn from that experience and how did it shape your early view of business?
Yeah, working with my dad was a pretty amazing experience for me. He worked a lot and traveled quite a bit for business. His offices were in New York, but he manufactured overseas. So he was overseas quite a bit. So when I was invited into his office to see how the sausage is made, it was really interesting. He went from someone who wanted to make sure I had my homework done to someone who really cared about the team members that he had working for him. Really got to see him at full power, which was, at that age, a really amazing thing to see.
So how old were you, just out of curiosity, when you first started to say, hey, there's this business in the background that my father is running?
So we were always around it because it was always around him. So if I was seeing him, I was around his business.
Okay.
I'd say that I probably started going there with frequency in the summer of, say, my sophomore, junior year in high school. So I got in pretty early and got to see him probably right around the same age I am now that I'm putting that together. So It was really, I'm reminded of quite a bit of what I saw as I have my own business.
So now there was, it sounded like an opportunity there for you, but you ultimately chose a different path. So talk about that for a minute. What led you away from that garment business and towards real estate and title?
I think that I saw, but mostly I heard from him that his business was changing quite a bit. And it was, for many reasons, just becoming different. It was consolidating overseas, and he could see that there was a finish line, at least what he thought was a finish line for his generation of people in that industry. So he really pushed me and challenged me to find something that I was really interested in. I went to school for art, so I knew that probably wasn't going to be the way to make a living. I saw real estate as a great opportunity. I loved how fast-paced it was. I loved making deals. I loved the networking aspect of it. It seemed like a bigger world than what he was involved in at the time.
Interesting. So you started to take notice of real estate, but when was your first kind of introduction to the title side of the industry? And when did you realize, hey, this is where I think I want to build something?
Yeah, so that's, you have to fast forward a couple more years after that. So I actually worked on the lending side for about 8 years.
Okay.
And I learned everything about how I wanted to run a business in the mortgage company. Everything they do, I'd like to do the opposite. It was 8 years of, it was tough. It was from 2003 to about 2010. And if you know anything about real estate, that was the refinance boom. It was when I was managing the departments I was managing. I had three shifts, sometimes going to 2 a.m. It was all hands on deck for years and years. And I made the decision one day that there has to be a different facet of this business where I'm not yelling and screaming every day, where I'm not under pressure every day, where I feel like I didn't take a vacation, a real vacation, for a week for 8 years. It was a lot of strain on personal relationships, right? Tough to raise a family under those conditions.
Sure.
So the insurance side, what was an opportunity that I grabbed almost immediately. So I had a little bit of work in there. We had a joint venture title company with the lender. So I was doing a lot of work with the title company that they had, learned a
Okay.
little bit about it, and made the shift over. I had a colleague that went to run his own mortgage company, and I left and had the opportunity to open a title company to support it. My father put me in that business, really was interested in me owning something, probably realized from 16 years old that I was a be a really terrible employee but a pretty good operator. And that was meaningful for him to take that chance and say, hey, I think you can do. And it was the right place for me to be. It allows me to do all of the things I like to do relative to real estate.
Awesome, awesome. And was that then when Concourse Land Transfer was born, essentially?
No, we started. No, my first agency in 2010 was a company called Modern Title. That was open for
Okay.
5 years, and I rolled it into Fidelity.
Okay. So then, to talk about the current entity, Concourse Land Transfer.
Yeah, so Concourse, we opened up in 2020. And
Okay.
also, if you know anything about real estate, that was the absolute worst time on earth to open up a title company. But what had happened was, coincidentally, the same person who had left the mortgage company in 2009 became the president of a large bank in 2020. And the minute he became president, he wanted to have a title company that could support his bank. And that's how we started. That's what Concourse started to do. That's something that happens a lot in my career, is that the networking is what brings me all of the opportunities. I have the great fortune of working with my friends, close friends, and not everybody has that opportunity. It can be the most fantastic relationship. It can also be a trying and difficult relationship. But what I stress to my team members is that the people we do business with are friends. We care very much about their success, and they care about our success in a different way than just clients do. So if we can translate that to other clients that we meet, we're doing a great job for them, probably better than most people can do.
Not unlike working with family sometimes.
It's exactly the same. And one of my partners is my daughter's godfather, so it is familial to me. That's incredibly meaningful to me, that because I know that they know that if I'm calling them with a problem, I'm really looking to solve it, right? Bringing something up just to throw a roadblock in their transaction. They understand that, hey, if you're on the phone with me, things have really gone sideways. Let's talk about how we can get to the next step.
Excellent. Title service, a fairly competitive space.
It is.
What would you say, what makes Concourse's approach stand out in that competitive market space?
This to that point, for people who don't know, title insurance premiums, most states, certainly the state we're sitting in right now, New Jersey, is regulated by the state. Aside from some junk fees here or there, I'm selling the same bag of sugar that the guy down the street is selling if he's selling title insurance. And there are 700 and other, roughly 700 other New Jersey agencies, just New Jersey, that are selling the exact same product. So we figured out pretty quickly that what I'm selling is me. What I'm selling is my philosophy about doing business, what I think is important. I'm reminded, and we do a kickoff call with all new clients, and I don't tell them our process. I ask them what process they're most familiar with, and we try to mimic that. I try to make sure that everybody does things slightly differently. So I want to make sure that we're hitting all the things that matter to them. And most recently, I had a phone call with a broker owner of a mortgage company. And he said, Scott, I really need you to do these things to do business with me. And I said, what are these things? He said, I need you to pick up the phone when I call. I said, I can do that. That's easy. He said, I need you to close on weekends. I said, I absolutely do that if we have to. That's easy. We can certainly figure that out. He said, and when I tell you a rush is a rush, I promise you it is. And I'd ask you that you just gave that a little bit more care. Now, I hate to tell him this, and I didn't tell him this. That's how we do business. Most of the time, the things that people are upset about are general business things that if you thought about it, it's common sense, you'd do that anyway. That's a bare minimum. It's our job to figure out what he really wants. As the transactions come in, we'll get to know that. But title insurance is interesting. Every professional, if they're good at what they do, has someone like me that they really trust. Because we talk to loan officers, real estate agents, and attorneys every day on every transaction. We get intimate with these files. We have to, if we're going to try to take that business away from somebody, we're ripping apart a really tight relationship. I'm waiting for the one day that he's pissed off that something didn't go right, and hopefully we can get business. That's a terrible client acquisition sort of situation. It's almost, it's very difficult. So it is super important that we are executing as best we can 24 hours a day. That's execution is the mantra here in the office. We treat everything like an emergency room, like triage. Everybody knows how to do everything. So if something comes in and needs to be done and I'm not at my desk, or our in-house attorney isn't at his desk, I know that any team member can pick that up and do that. That takes a lot of work to train people up to that level. That's very important to us.
Especially when it sounds like there's very little, if any, room for
There is
error.
a finish line, which is I am going to refinance or I am going to buy a house. And anything that is in that way is an impediment. Whether right, wrong, or indifferent, whether I'm 100% correct about something that I find, I am stopping something from happening. And what I tell people specifically is if you're talking to me, the owner, things have gone completely sideways. Now we really need to engage in what's going on, because everything in real estate can be solved with two things, and that's money or time. If you have all the time in the world, you can solve anything. And if you have all the money in the world, you can solve everything faster. Without those two things, I'm stuck. But there aren't a lot of law doesn't move quickly, even
No.
real estate law. Getting bad news to our customers as fast as possible is paramount. We have to let them know that there's a problem early on, so it gives us the opportunity to fix it in the confines of a closing. But you're absolutely right. Nobody knows that we're the best title company on earth other than our clients, because they all have the best title company on earth for them that they're already working with. And there's so much at stake to try us out. I am very happy when people just give us a shot, because what that says is this is something that's very important. I'm entrusting you hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars on the line for this transaction. We trust you that you'll be able to do this work. That's something that I do hold dear. And it sounds silly, but you are entrusting us with a lot of money. And not just that, you're entrusting us with potentially your new home. And that's different than buying a sweater. It just is. So we're very thoughtful about that in each transaction.
Understood, understood. So let's talk about industry involvement for a moment. So you contribute to The Advocate for a decade now. You're active with the NJLTA and also PAC efforts. So talk about that for a minute. Why is industry involvement like that so important to you?
There are so many things going on in the world of real estate for it to change. I'm sure you've heard about changes in the realty world. There are changes in the title insurance world too. There are alternative products to title insurance that are being introduced. All so that a borrower, it's easier for a borrower to get into a home, usually for the first time. Barrier to enter a new home is getting harder and harder. The bar is higher and higher as prices go up or as rates go up. Just affordability is an issue. So anywhere you can save some money, it's expensive to buy a house. A realtor is a lot of money. The insurance is a lot of money. Your homeowner's insurance is a lot of money. So we're all trying to figure out how to make it less expensive, but still have the same. You're buying a product. We're selling you an insurance policy. You can imagine that if it's cheaper, it affords you less coverage somehow, right? You're not getting something for nothing. So there are changes that trying to be legislated every year. So it's really important for us to be ahead of those issues. We want our voice heard. We want to explain to people. Nobody knows what title insurance is. What I do every day is educate people what they're paying so much money for. It's a black magic voodoo of this industry. Everybody knows Scott shows up in a fancy car and he looks nice. This is too expensive. Sure, but there are claims, and the claims are very expensive. That's the problem. If you get hit with the booby prize and you get a claim, you're potentially spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to litigate that the insurance is for.
Understood.
But it's a big number on a settlement statement that people want to know what it is and what they're getting. We want to make sure that our voices are heard. Obviously, politicians understand what we're talking about. They may understand real estate, they may not. Their concern is their constituents. What can we do to educate their constituents about the product that they're buying? Advocate is my sort of escape valve and talk about anything. Over the years, they've let me discuss any issue that I can think of. Some of them are related to the industry, some of them are related to the business. What an agent is thinking in that particular time in 2025.
Understood. Speaking of changes, whether it be regulation, technology, or even trends, recognizing that you keep your hand close to the pulse of the industry, what are some things that you see in terms of the industry evolving in the coming years? Is there a particular trend or something you're seeing on the horizon that's interesting?
Yeah, I think technology is something that a lot of agents are still slow to adopt. You would be surprised how many smaller agencies you see that are still using QuickBooks, that are still doing things on with paper and pen. The bulk of what we spend here monthly is technology costs. I am able to run as lean as I am with team members because of the technology that we use. It'll be no surprise for you to hear the words AI. I think that the mistake people are making are thinking that robots are coming for your job. I disagree. I think people who know how to use AI efficiently and effectively, those are the people coming for your jobs. I use it for quite a bit. I run pretty much every contract I get through it. I run all sorts of different title scenarios through it. I've run surveys through it, just emails through it. Anything that I touch, I'm using some facet to make me either a stronger communicator, maybe it explains an issue a little bit better than I can, maybe it dumbs it down for someone who doesn't understand the concepts that I'm working with, maybe it lets me understand what a particular contract looks like. Then I'm able to go back to whoever sent me the email or asked me the question and be able to provide to them probably the most robust answer I could. I can fully answer a question or propose a question to them that they weren't thinking themselves. I think that you're going to see more of that. I think technology is going to be increasingly important in our industry. And then what that's going to mean is two things. One is it's a licensed endeavor, right? So I'm licensed to do the business in the 26 states that I do business in. You're still going to need a licensed individual, at least for the foreseeable future, to validate the information that you're getting. AI hallucinates sometimes. You have to look at it. You have to be clear that you're getting the information that you're trying to give. If something like that happens, you need someone with some acumen to be able to describe what's being reported. Trust
Yeah,
but verify.
absolutely. That's funny you said that. The same topic came up in our quarterly meeting as a team relative to AI, trust and verify. And also, we talked a lot about it's kind of if you give me the nicest set of Craftsman tools, it would sit in my garage and I'd look at it and I'd be proud of that beautiful red box. But honestly, I wouldn't know what to do with a lot of that stuff. Whereas a seasoned craftsman or carpenter with 20 some years, exactly what to do with every single tool in that box and do it well. So it
And
really comes
that's
down to whose hands are at the wheel,
exactly.
which really dictates the power of AI, the power of prompts, if you will, to be very granular about it. So we see that. And you're right, sometimes the information, the outputs are good, and sometimes you have to verify.
Sure, 100%.
Let's switch gears for a minute. Very much family clearly plays a role in your story from the influence of your dad, but also let's talk about your wife for a moment. She's got this interior design business. She's launching a home fragrance brand, and you're having some role and some involvement. Talk about that for a minute and your role and how you see that dynamic playing out, because she's your wife, but also in a sense, you're working on business together as well.
Sure. My wife's business in my head is the greatest business on earth. If you asked me, I would tell you that she goes out shopping with fabulously wealthy people and they have a fantastic time with champagne glasses in their hands and they pick out beautiful things for their wonderful homes. The reality is that it's a business like any other. And that's probably one eighth of what she really does during the day. What is most impressive about what she does is that she blends all of that artistic passion with a passion for running a business. And those aren't necessarily always aligned. She's worked for designers in the past that are amazing artists and run terrible businesses. Conversely, I've worked for businessmen that close, very smart businessmen that close businesses for whatever reason. Just the fact that she does it on her own as much as she's able to do is incredibly impressive. She doesn't have a staff of nine people. She doesn't have, it's her. And vendors that she uses. So it's, I get a lot of perspective about time management from watching her work. I get a lot of perspective from the separation of the business from the product, right? Is that she can be incredibly passionate about a product and be interested in how that's developed, but also know how to be a merchant and sell it. I don't tell her often enough. I probably, this is the first time she'll hear it recently, but it's an incredibly difficult endeavor, and I give her a lot of credit. I have a full staff of people helping me do what I do, and I don't do anything artistic. I'm producing a piece of paper that spits out of a computer. So it is gives me a lot of clarity about what I get upset about, and I understand her limitations vis-a-vis resources. And I understand how lucky I am to have the resources that I have all the time. And it helps me quite a bit. And I think I give her some perspective on maybe you're thinking about things too small. It can be bigger than what it is.
And that's endeavoring. And I've heard and seen all sides and experienced. Some people would love nothing more than to work with their significant other on a business venture. And some people think that would be the worst possible thing you could do.
It's funny that you say that. My wife and I don't necessarily share the same opinion about working with friends. I seek friends out to work with because I know that sort of gun to their head, they care more than a stranger, let's say. My wife, on the other hand, has a very difficult time having a tough conversation with someone that she's close with. If something goes wrong, she feels if it's a stranger that she has a relationship with, but a stranger nonetheless. She has an easier job of a very difficult conversation about something that went wrong. I see the opposite. She tries very hard not to work with friends. I try very hard to work with friends. I understand her philosophy. I think it's a communication breakdown, right? I think that you can learn how to communicate, but I'm not going to tell her at this stage in her career that to go pick up friends. She seems to be doing all right on her own.
Understood. So it would seem that if I were to look at the journey of your experiences, there's a strong tendency to be a collaborator within you. And you've also partnered with close friends, as I understand, in ventures like wine and cigars.
Yeah.
Talk about that for a moment, choosing business partners among your friends. Is there any guidance you might give our listeners there?
Yeah, it's worked as many times as it hasn't. And I will tell you that sort of every lawsuit I've ever heard about started out as two friends trying to help each other or do the right things. Understand that picking the people that you're around and picking the people that you do business with is super important in my world. And when you find those people that you align with, that align with your culture, that's super important to us. And once you find those people, then I'll open 30 businesses with the people that I really care about. I mean, we're interested in a lot of things. Real estate, you meet a lot of interesting people in real estate. Nobody goes to school for it. It's an island of broken toys. Everybody gets there in a really interesting way. Everybody has different interests. And it's honestly the cigars and the wine company, it's what do we have interest in? What do we think other people that we know would like? The cigars were for giveaways for realtors. And then we found a friend of ours who knew a factory that could manufacture them. We slapped our label on them, and now we have an amazing gift for our clients. Then the client said, wait a minute, we want to put our label on it and we want to give them away to our clients. Now we have a business. That's it. Really, I wish there was market research, or it wasn't. It was solving a problem and then them getting excited about it and them saying, we'd like to do it too. That's interesting, right? That speaks to the friendship, the relationship. Hey, if you like this, we like it too. Let's all do it together.
Understood. So thinking about that, as well as you've experienced a bit of both, you've experienced some family b
Yep.
dynamics in the context of business, you've experienced some partnerships outside of family. If you could reflect on that for a moment, Scott, what do you see as the key differences or similarities between the two? Is it the same, or are there
Yeah.
distinct differences when you're engaged with friends versus with family?
In thinking about that question, I came to realize that entrepreneurship was the family business. So my father was interested in many different businesses. He had small pieces of every business that he touched. I learned that early on. That is what sort of motivated him to get involved in these businesses, to be as excited about these businesses. He had a little bit of skin in the game. It was interesting to him. He participated in their success. He participated in their failures. So that is the it's that family business that he passed on to me. The desire to A, be involved in a lot of different things, get excited about a lot of different things. I'm in very boring businesses and I'm very excited every day to work in them. I really love what I'm doing here. That sounds like a platitude. It's not. I like the detective work. I like yelling at attorneys. I like yelling at realtors. I like getting yelled at by realtors. I enjoy sort of the closing of a deal. I really do like that. There's very few things that you can do in a daily basis where deals are closing that frequently as homes, right? There's always something going on in the office, and there's always excitement. There's always something to uncover and figure out. And it could be you could figure out something good, or you could figure out something bad. And we uncover fraud. We uncovered things that we didn't, know, programs that perhaps a borrower could get into that they didn't know about. So there's all kinds of things that exist that we can figure out. I think that the biggest lesson that my father taught me was that it's the people you meet, the networking is the most important thing. My father, I remember it like it was yesterday. I'd be in the car with him and he would be calling other friends that he knew to talk about employees who had just been fired at different firms. And he was always trying to place people that he knew at jobs that he liked. And then wouldn't you know it, he'd be brought in as a consultant at some point. And wouldn't you know it, now he's meeting the owner and he's friendly with them and his network grows. And the larger his network got, then you could just see how his success came. It all he was doing was just working with all the people that he knew over the years, over and over and over again, and that network grows over the years. If I could do 10% of that, I'd be as successful as, I mean, that's what I've tried to replicate my entire career, is that one lesson that he taught.
Thank you for sharing that. And it's as I reflect on your story, as the story of so many others that have been on this program, it always amazes me the profound influence that that familial relationship has on us, both consciously and I think subconsciously. We don't realize it, but it sounds like so much of you was influenced by what you just observed your father doing, and you brought forward, albeit in a different industry, in a different way, but nonetheless brought it forward. Thank you for that share. That was pretty powerful. So let's look at the here and now in the concourse. What's you look back on the years since you launched Concourse, what's been like if you said, hey, there was a pinnacle moment, this most rewarding moment so far, what would that have been?
I don't know if I could. It has nothing to do with business, and it has everything to do with business. I have the incredible good fortune to be partnered with a bank that uses the Masters every year as their big yearly event for their biggest clients. So every year I get to go to Augusta and I get to watch the greatest golf tournament in the world. This year only for 7 days, but I do go less than that some years. This is a trip that my partner and I have been trying to replicate since we were invited for the first time in 2003 by a vendor. So we were working at a mortgage company. We were a good client of a vendor. They brought us out and they showed us what hospitality really was in business. And it has become a yearly tradition for us now. It is my favorite week of the year. It is hard to describe for someone who has never been what the look on someone's face when they walk through those gates for the first time, if they've never been before. It's Disney World, it's Candyland, it's for a golfer, it's the promised land. To be able to share that with strangers is incredibly rewarding. And it is, and for an entire week, we don't talk about business once unless something comes up that's an emergency. It's really, how do we grow these relationships as leaders in our industry in a social setting, in the most social setting, over the course of an afternoon, over a course of a morning, in a beautiful park setting, watching the greatest golfers in the world play golf. That is the most rewarding thing that I do each year. It has each trip, each new person that we bring has, if they know what they're seeing, and not everybody does, but the people who really do appreciate it so much, they've helped our business 100 times what it costs us to bring them there. It really is a rewarding endeavor.
Well, wow. I'm free that week, by the way.
I will let you know. It did. Yes, you and I've heard that a lot of people I know seem to be free that week.
We're free that week. So let me ask you the other side of that. Looking back at what's been the toughest challenge you've had to navigate? What was that moment where you're like, oh boy, this is a hard one?
Look, things happen in real estate, and one of the biggest things, really the only thing I'm really nervous about in this industry is wire fraud. Wire fraud is incredibly rampant in real estate transactions. What that means is that some bad actor gets into someone's email, sends somebody an email that says, "Hey, wire instructions have changed. You have to wire your deposit, your final, whatever you're bringing to the table, whatever the amount is, you have to send it to me right now, or your closing is going to be delayed. And I apologize, this is coming fast, but we got to do this quicker. We're going to be in trouble. Your rate lock's going to blow," or whatever immediacy they have seen, they use to get a borrower to do something, or an attorney to do something, or a realtor to do something. In the last 5 years, knock on wood, we've only had one. I'm happy to say that it wasn't us that was invaded. Not that matters. Still borrower's money going out the door. We were lucky. It was only $87,000 versus the hundreds of thousands of dollars that it can be, millions of dollars it can be in a transaction. And they were able to recover it, which is unbelievable because it genuinely is almost impossible to get this money back. The receiving bank held it. They saw it as fraud and returned it back to the borrower, which is incredibly rare, incredibly rare. So that's incredibly scary. You have a very difficult conversation. So the first conversation is a friendly one. Hey, this might be a problem. The second conversation is, hey guys, we're all going to start pointing fingers up pretty quick. So I just want to let you know what's going to happen. Everyone's going to stop talking as friends. We're all going to be very mad at each other. And the reason for that is somebody did something stupid. Nobody robbed a bank. Nobody, right? They just somebody answered an email, didn't think carefully about something. That's a very difficult conversation, especially when someone's not able to buy something because all their money just flushed down the toilet. Those are tough, and those do happen, and I have them. And you have to be ready for really difficult conversations when really difficult conversations are the only thing that is left to have. And I think a lot of people fail by pushing that down the road or being too afraid to have an honest conversation because once it happened, so we have to deal with where we are. What I think we're really good at is doing that quickly. But when we don't, and we have to do something last minute, we also have to be able to have that conversation. Own the things that you can control.
Many years ago, a mentor of mine echoed that point because I was saying, hey, I've got to deliver some bad news. Do I do it today or do I wait till Monday? You can do it today or wait till Monday, but it's still going to be there on Monday.
And look, I think that people don't want to look stupid and people don't want to be wrong. And one thing that business teaches you is that you don't have to be stupid to make a mistake, and you don't necessarily have to be wrong for something bad to happen. You have to deal with what's in front of you. I'm not a guy who worries about the 418 things that can happen in a real estate transaction, but when something does happen, I want to make sure that we're most prepared to fix it as fast as we can.
Understood. In many ways, Scott, it's clear that you are very much a brand ambassador for Concourse Land Transfer. But if you were to take Concourse as a brand unto itself from a brand perspective, how would you hope that Concourse would be seen by its clients, by its partners, by future prospective customers of the business?
Yeah, you can really boil it down to the one word is trust. We are trusted with a lot of money. We're trusted with legal documents. We're trusted with estates, family members fighting amongst themselves. We're trusted with a lot of things. Not everybody thinks about how much trust they're giving us in every transaction, but I think about it. I want to make sure that people trust that if they need to pick up the phone and call me, I'm there. If Concourse is needed to help with something, we are sufficiently able to do that. I work quite a bit on problem files for the bank that we're partnered with. These are people that are mad at the bank. They don't want to do what the bank wants them to do. And I get involved in those really difficult ones because I can communicate what the issue is, tell them where they are and why we have to do what we're doing, and more often than not, get them to understand that this is neither good nor bad. It just is necessary. You could be mad, I get it. You could not want to do it, I hear you. But it is going to get done no matter what. We could do it simply or we can do it difficultly. I know how to do both of those. And wouldn't it be nicer if we just got it done in the beginning when everybody has a smile on their face? We have legal tactics to get things done that need to get done. Well, I really don't want to use those if we don't have to.
Understood, understood. Having grown up in a family business, but ultimately building a career outside of it, and I ask this of all of our guests, what advice would you give to a young person who was basically thinking about venturing into the family business or possibly taking a path of their own? If you could go back in time when you were at that crossroads, or you could impart some advice to that young person that's thinking, do I join the family business? Do I go out on my own? What do I do? How would you?
So, if the family gives you the opportunity to get in early, I would recommend that strongly. Because the opportunity that I had was to see it when I was young, formulating in my head what I wanted to do for a career. I found out that wasn't the one for me, right? I knew that I wanted to have a business. I knew that wasn't it. Without that clarity, I might have stayed there forever. Who knows? And maybe I sink with the ship. Maybe I make it better. That's murky, but what I did know is that I like to do all the things my dad did. I didn't like to do them in a job that he had, and that's really it. So my recommendation is, if you're given the opportunity, my dad fired me, by the way. It's difficult to work with family. It is. It's there a lot more. There is a lot more at stake. You have the right last name, but the wrong work ethic, perhaps. Or you just don't care for, you don't have the aptitude to do it. Who knows? Figure that out fast because there is no correct way to get into what I got into. There was my way to get into it, and my way is different than other ways. So without that clarity of, hey, this isn't for me, I wouldn't have gotten to where I was. So now, if you can't do that, the other option is learn everything you can somewhere else. My brother never went into my father's business, went into a completely separate business. And did it on because that's something that he had aptitude for. He liked it. And then saw all the things I saw, not in a business setting, just saw my father the way he was and took whatever he took from that different direction. So there's a thousand different ways of doing it. Leverage whatever you have in front of you. If you're able to get into the business early, do it. If they make you wait until you're 18, do that too. Give as much interest as you can learn about it. If you can go work somewhere else in the same business, maybe that's the answer. I know tons of friends with family businesses. They make their kids go work somewhere else and come back. I think that also is a different that there's no real way to figure out if it was right or wrong. It's that is another path that has people have had success with.
Understood. Understood. Last question. If any of our listeners wanted to learn more about you or about Concourse Land Transfer, what's the best way to connect, Scott?
Sure. I would absolutely try to find me on LinkedIn. Concourse LT is our website. I'm in the Advocate every quarter. You can certainly read the articles that I write. I love writing them. Send me a note. I give this offer to your audience. I give it to all of my clients as well. Title's a weird thing. If you have a question about something, shoot me a note. Even if I'm not in the transaction, oftentimes I can explain something that's going on in a way that you might understand that you're not getting out of the vendor that you're using. I think everyone should know. Insurance is incredibly powerful. I think everyone should know more about it. I'm happy to explain it to anyone who asks.
Understood. Great. Scott, thanks so much. And thanks for joining us on Growing Up B2B. Your
Thanks, Ed. I
story
appreciate it.
totally, your story really highlights the lessons of growing up in a family business, finding your own lane, and then building a career while continuing to embrace entrepreneurship in all kinds of ways. So, again, we've been speaking with Scott Rudkay, president of Concourse Land Transfer. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this is Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you next time. Scott, thank you so much for being on today.
Thanks, Ed. I appreciate it.
All right. Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, And being a second generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed Delia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.